NRI Wellness. We bring you the latest in health and nutrition information, create customized nutrition programs, and walk you through the process to ensure your success.
Good evening, good night, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for listening to the 10 Dimensions of Wellness. I am your host, Cammy Red, the owner of NRI Wellness, and today's show is super, super special. Now, you guys know that I normally interview business owners, doctors, people who are out there, you know, I guess on the other end of the wellness journey. They've gone through their journey. They're here educating you. Well, today's show, I got somebody that's walking this journey with you. I have Tanisha Bullock, lupus survivor, kidney, renal failure survivor. She's going to tell us all about herself. Tanisha, I want you to introduce yourself to us. Tell us how you got to this point and where you are on your wellness journey right now.
Okay, well, hello, everybody. My name is Tanisha Bullock, and I am a 37-year-old lupus survivor and kidney failure survivor. I can tell you that my journey or my path to wellness has been a long one. If we go back to when I was a child, I was healthy. I was your typical healthy little girl, barely got colds or never had strep, never had ear infections. I just was a healthy girl. When I got moved into my teens, I would get a sinus infection maybe around September of every year. But again, I still was healthy, never really missed school for stomach aches or anything. But when I turned 23, little did I know that that was going to be the end of what I perceived as wellness for me. When I was 23 years old, which was back in 2006, I had just graduated from undergrad. So I went to Meredith College. Meredith College is it's an all-women school located in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I spent about 5 years there. And I majored in flute performance, so I am a classical flutist by trade.
Oh, you know what? I hate to interrupt, but you guys, you know how we like to do music stuff in the 10 Dimensions of Wellness group on Facebook. Now listen, you are going to have to bless us with a performance, because we do celebrate music therapy, and to have you perform would be super awesome. So I'm just dropping it right there. Go ahead, proceed.
Okay, all right. I'm a classical flutist by trade, and I studied at Meredith for 5 years doing that, and I'm also bilingual. I minored in Spanish, so I am a bilingual classical flutist / teacher. And so I had moved back home after graduation. Graduation was on Mother's Day in 2006. So what a gift to give my mom, right? Her daughter, her only daughter and the baby of the family, graduating from school. So I'll never forget.
Very cool. Yeah.
When I moved back home the afternoon of graduation, it was really, really stormy. Like, we were in the last bit of spring, and it got really, really dark right after literally we loaded everything on the truck and in the car, and it got very dark, very ominous looking, and we headed home. And so my home is about 60 miles east of Raleigh. So it was a good little drive. I'm from Rocky Mount, North Carolina, if any of you have heard of Rocky Mount. That is where I am.
I know where I lived in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina for a minute, so I'm very familiar with those.
Okay, absolutely. I'm very familiar with Myrtle Beach as well. And so we got home, and I oddly enough, it was still raining. But I happened to look out the window, and I just looked. I was looking at how ominous it looked, and I remember saying to my mom, "Gosh, this storm feels different. I don't know why, but this storm just feels different." Well, literally 2 months later, July 1st, I woke up. I was supposed to be starting my summer job, and oh, let me back up. I moved home thinking that I was getting ready to move out to the West Coast. I had gotten into the University of New Mexico. I got into their music graduate school. And at the time, you know, I was dating, and the person that I was dating was from Rocky Mount as well. He was in college as well and was gonna be graduating. We were going to move out to New Mexico and kind of start our lives. Well, that is not at all what God planned. Like, it's just not at all. It was not in his plan. But on July 1st, little did I know, I would find out very quickly what his plan was. So I woke up on the morning of July 1st. I was getting ready to start my job, just a temporary summer job. And I literally could not get out of bed. I don't know how else to say it. I just could not get out of bed. And I laid there and I looked to my left and I looked to my right. I held my fingers up and my fingers were literally like five times the size of my normal fingers. My knees were swollen. It looked like I had elephant, if you've ever seen people that have severe edema.
Edema, yeah, where they have the extremely swollen ankles and hands, mm-hmm, and things of that nature.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it looked like. And so I literally had to call on my mom and my two brothers to literally get me out of bed and carry me to the bathroom. And I remember making it over to the sink, getting ready to brush my teeth, and I couldn't brush my teeth. And again, this was my first day of work. I know that I went to bed the night before at a reasonable time, but it literally seemed like, and I was fine, literally the night before I was fine. And I wake up and I'm this completely different person. And not only that, I'm supposed to start work today. Well, somehow, I don't know how, other than the grace of God, I made it to work, but I just felt extremely tired. Like, I know that I went to bed early enough to get at least 8 to 10 hours of sleep. Like, I shouldn't be feeling like I maybe had 20 minutes of sleep last night. I just was run down, but somehow I made it through the day. And that is literally how that summer of 2006 progressed for me. The symptoms got worse. The symptoms included extreme weight loss. I had lost in the month of July. By the end of July, I was about 35 to 40 pounds lighter. I would spike these fevers. The fevers were unreal. Like, I would feel feverish, take my temperature, it'd be 101, 102, take a fever reducer like Tylenol, it would go away, I'd be fine. And then literally 3 hours later, you know, as soon as that medicine wore off, I had a fever again. And I literally got to the point where I was carrying a thermometer around with me.
That is so unhealthy for your body.
It is. It is, absolutely. And we know that Tylenol and Aleve and Advil are terrible on your kidneys.
It's of not course, yet. So then, it was the fevers.
Yes.
The fact that your temperature was spiking to 102 every 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And even you taking, like, your body was under so much stress at that point. Mm-hmm. You were taking Tylenol, which was horrible on your kidney output. Mm-hmm. And now you're also dealing with the 102 fever, which is causing your internal temperature
to rise. Which we know high temperatures can cause a
organ shutdown.
It denatures your proteins.
Yep.
Which is why people that have chronic high fevers, they get delirium, you know, because it messes with your, like you said, with your organs.
It messes with everything. Like it literally, it's almost like it fries your brain.
Yes.
Fries your kidneys, your liver, your all of your internal organs. The reason why we have to maintain a certain body heat is so that our organs function.
Exactly. Exactly. In order to be compatible with life, you have to maintain that normal body temperature. But for two and a half, 3 months straight, every day, I had at least one fever. On a good day, it was maybe three. On a bad day, 5 to 7. And I was, you know, being a woman, I just thought, you know what? I just graduated from a really intensive 5-year program. Like, I worked my butt off and I was under an immense amount of stress. This has got to be my body reacting to what you've just come off of. Okay. I didn't think anything about a chronic illness or a virus, or I didn't think in that direction at all. I thought it was stress.
I can see how you could believe that. The reason why is stress shows up in our body in various ways, and stress also mimics various ailments. Mm-hmm. So I could definitely see how you could get some of those symptoms confused with just being overworked and stressed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think women especially are kind of quick to go there in their mind. I'm just overworked. I'm just doing too much. I just need to sit down. I'm going to be okay. But that the symptoms that stress can cause can be a wake up or a sign that something's not going right in your body. So, you know, I just want to sidetrack here for a little bit. Women especially, listen to your body.
Yes. We suffer from what's called strong woman syndrome.
Absolutely.
And that's where we put ourselves last, not listening to the aches, the pains, the groans, the swelling, the fevers, the, you know, all of the little things that our bodies are telling us that we need to actually, you know, that's warning
us. For. Right.
Like, no. So I definitely, mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. And so I had chalked it up to that. You know, I had, as a flute major, I ended up for the last 3 years of my study at Meredith, the original professor who was the primary reason why I chose Meredith, was to study with Pam, because her career modeled what I wanted my career to look like. And she was someone that I thought I could really, really learn from, and we clicked. But she ended up leaving because of internal administrative issues. And what she was replaced with a professor who was just absolutely brutal and abusive to me. And every time I left lessons, you know, 3 years worth of abuse, he would completely demean my playing. Oh, you're never going to be this. You're never going to be that. You know, what school, when I told him that I wanted to go to grad school, you know, and I wanted to get one of those competitive teaching assistantships. Oh, you're not, you're never going to get that. I mean, it was just awful. And I kept a lot of that to myself.
Can
now,
I
my mom something? And I are really close, and I pretty practically share. Would you say?
Let me, I don't mean to interrupt, but was this a man? You said this was a man?
He was a man.
Mm-hmm. Was he Caucasian or Black?
He was Jewish.
Mm.
He was one of those Orthodox Jews. Yes.
So was this his personality towards everyone or just towards you?
Well, everybody in the studio. Okay, so when he came into Meredith, the flute studio was thriving. I know there had to, for Meredith to be a school of 2,500 women, you know, that's very small. So to have a flute, a music studio of 13 is a big deal. And so at that time, he inherited a studio that Pam took 30 years to develop. And it was about 13 students strong, including a couple of graduate students. Well, by the time I graduated in 2006, I was the only flute major left.
Wow. So he did not, it wasn't just you.
No, it wasn't just me, but I was determined not to let him steal my joy for what I knew was a God-given talent. God gave me a talent, and he gave me an assignment at that time to develop my talent and develop it at Meredith. Unfortunately, you know, Pam left, but, and I had to endure those 3 years. And majority of those 3 years, I kept that abuse bottled up. I didn't even tell my mom. She and I are super close, and I just didn't, I didn't say anything hardly to anybody. And sometimes, you know, as I think back, I wonder if that had anything to do with causing that switch to go off with my immune system, because we know that stress is the number one trigger for lupus.
Oh, I was just about to say that. When you stated that, I did a show called Stress That You Think Is Not, that we normally don't think of as stress. Mm-hmm. Wow. And I talk about all the ways that we, you know, stress our bodies out. But I also talk about the chemicals that we release in our bodies when we are under stress and pressure. And those are chemicals that are not actually supposed to be released on a daily or hourly or regular basis in us. And it can cause toxicity, and it can set up infection. It can weaken our immune system, and it can make us sick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, at that time in my life, being young and being pretty much otherwise healthy up for, you know, for 22 years, you know, I just didn't know. I just had no idea, you know, the link between stress and autoimmunity. But like I said, so, you know, I made it through the summer, and I realized that there was no way in hell that I could travel across the country and even think about schooling on a higher level with my body being sick. I was really, really sick. I didn't know it, but I was really, really sick. And, you know, the interesting thing too is that my boyfriend at the time thought I was making this stuff up. You know, when I would call him and say after work, I can't go out. I can't go to the movie. I don't have energy to do take. Like, I wasn't normal. And he actually thought that I was making up these symptoms.
So, Tanisha, he thought you were actually making all of this up. He just thought you were making up excuses for not wanting to see him at all.
Absolutely. I have a vivid memory of he coming to visit me, and it was really hot. And we stood out on our stoop here, and I was telling him the symptoms that I was having. And he was like, he looked at me really puzzled. And he was like, I just can't believe that all this is going on. Like, you are making excuses for not wanting to hang out with me. And he actually got mad at me, and we that incident didn't lead to us breaking up, but God did interrupt our relationship. And I thank God for that. That's a whole nother podcast.
Listen, okay, so he literally took something that you were dealing with and made it personal. And it wasn't even really about him. How long after did you get your diagnosis?
So that was end of July. So there was no moving to New Mexico, right? Because I was too ill to even think about that. So what I did do is I put in, I spent a couple of days looking for jobs. And, you know, being a new college graduate, I knew that at that point that I needed a job that was going to give me insurance, because one of the main reasons I delayed going to the doctor was because I didn't have insurance. But God is good. He allowed me to get a teaching job. And so my first job was as a choir director and a general music teacher at a middle school. And that was definitely divine, because when I walked into my interview, the assistant principal at that time was a man who actually was my assistant principal in high school. So he knew me. And so he was like, oh, hands down, you got the job. So as soon as I got the job and I started...
How miraculous is that? Yeah.
I know. As soon as I got the job and started working, I called my primary care provider and I said, and his name is Dr. Parker. And I called and I said, is there any way that I can see my Dr. Parker ASAP? And we're talking end of August at this point. Well, the receptionist told me, Dr. Parker is in Africa right now on a mission trip.
Girl, stop playing.
My heart sank. I was like, you have got to be. And she was like, he will not be back until mid-October. And I said, I cannot wait. And she said, before I could say anything, she said, however, we do have an endocrinologist who is filling in for him. And his name is Dr. Hannah. And I sat there and I thought, and I said, if he's an endocrinologist, then he has some knowledge on how systems work. So I said, okay, I'm not gonna wait for Dr. Parker. I'm gonna give me Dr. Hannah. And she booked me right away. And like a couple of days later, I went in and saw Dr. Hannah. And that was a godsend, because he knew, he was a foreign doc. He was, he came from Saudi Arabia, and he could look at me. When he walked in the office, he knew exactly what was going on. Like, he asked me very pointed and specific questions. He was like, so you've been tired, you've been running a fever, you've been losing weight, your hair loss, and you're African American. All right. The nurse was in there at that time too. And he was running off this list to her as to what blood work he wanted stat. And of course, I didn't know the names of the test that primarily diagnosed lupus, but I do remember hearing ANA, and I do remember hearing creatinine. Those two words stuck out. Well, about 3 or 4 days later, he called and he said, actually, my mother picked up the phone because I was working. I was in the classroom at that time. And my mom said that she picked up the phone and it was Dr. Hannah himself. And he told her that she needed to get me to a rheumatologist right away. He said that he was putting in, and at that time, there was only one rheumatologist in Rocky Mount where I live. And he had made a stat appointment to Dr. Patron to get me seen. And so I go into, and at this point, my mom is giving me this news over the phone. I happened to be on my planning period, so I didn't have kids in the room with me, but I really didn't know how to feel. I felt relieved that there was a name to what I was going through, but I didn't know, I had no idea the severity of the lupus in my body at that time, and I had no idea how it was going to change my life. It was life-changing.
Yeah, but you know what? I think God aligned all of that so that you could find out in the way that you did, because everything you just described, you literally, it was step by step, almost by design, for you to be, for to actually find out in a manner that would actually allow you to be healed quickly.
Exactly, like, because
from even from your doctor being on leave in Africa and an endocrinologist filling in for him, like, this is all, like, this couldn't have been a more perfect design.
Exactly. And I mean, he knew exactly what to test for, which as I think back on it, it just really blew my mind that God's hand was in it from the start. So I go to Dr. Patron, who's the rheumatologist, and, you know, he's a white man. He'd been there for years and years and years. And actually, I had classes with his son, Paul, but in high school and in middle school. And he was just very not interested in hearing this Black girl talk about these symptoms that she's having. He just didn't care. I mean, his attitude showed it. Now, his PA, who was a woman, Allison, she just would always look at me with this puzzled look, like she just couldn't figure it out. And after, I'd say maybe 6 months, 6 to 8 months of going to Dr. Patron and not getting any better, I mean, he just threw the standard medication at me, which was prednisone, high-dose prednisone, which we know has terrible effects.
Yes, it's got horrible, horrible side effects. Yes.
And Plaquenil. And he said, you know, this is the standard treatment for anyone who presents with classic lupus. And I mean, he never even did.
So he never even gave you a specific assessment to see what are your symptoms like and where you were, what you were presenting with. He never did any of that.
He never did any of that. He just threw medicine at me, basically. He did require me to have a biopsy at the hospital. And he said that biopsy determined that I had stage 3 kidney failure. He never even did a urinalysis on me. He never did a 24-hour urine clearance to see how much protein I was leaking. He should have known that this young African-American woman needs to have an eye on her kidneys, because the research says that young Black women have lupus nephritis as a part of their lupus diagnosis more than any other racial group. So the first thing I feel like he should have done in that office visit was at least give me a 24-hour urine collection, protein, to see how much protein I was leaking. But he didn't. Long story short, I got away from him. I tried a rheumatologist in Greenville. The only thing he told me was that I had super big eyes and that it looked like I had a thyroid problem, not lupus.
Who, the rheumatologist in Greenville?
In Greenville, yes.
Oh my God. Okay, keep going. All right.
And so then we tried this rheumatologist in Raleigh, who was Sylvia Ross. She was the first physician, rheumatologist, that actually heard me and began to treat me as an individual. She was the one that did do a first-time urine creatinine clearance on me. She adjusted my steroids and managed that treatment, my Plaquenil as well. She was the one that kind of got me on the right foot. I started to feel a little bit better. But at that time, my kidneys were slowly, my kidney function was slowly diminishing. And unfortunately, the kidney involvement was worse than the way it was affecting my joints and muscles. And nobody seemed to catch that until it was too late. When she saw that my creatinine was like at a 3.5, I believe it was, that's when she referred me to a nephrologist in Raleigh. Well, he didn't do anything. He made it worse. He said, well, you know, we'll throw some chemotherapy on it and let's see how it works. And so I went through 6 months of chemotherapy to, in his words, give my kidneys a break so that they could recover.
So, okay, stop. I did the same amount of chemo for breast cancer because I was diagnosed at zero stage plus, which means that I caught it right in time, right at the beginning.
Right.
What you just said made absolutely no sense to me because chemo damaged my kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly. For you to say that, I'm just sitting here like, huh? Like, you see how I just said stop?
Yep, I'm gonna close this blind.
You're fine. That was actually told to you that
yes.
Chemo would give your kidneys a break. Oh my
yes.
God. Do you know that I am still, okay, I've been in remission for 7 years. Do you know that I still have kidney issues from chemo?
That is crazy. What happens? You run high? Are you, what's going on with your kidney?
My output fluctuates. So I am okay, my thyroid shut down. My pancreas is going to shut down eventually. So I am moving into renal failure.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but these are side effects of chemotherapy.
Oh my gosh. What are they doing to keep, that is crazy.
Well, you know, first of all, I work with my doctor, but I also treat myself naturally now. So I'm reversing all things that they said, especially with the hypothyroidism, with my thyroid shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
I am working with another doctor who actually specializes in natural therapy when it comes to hypothyroidism, pancreas disorders, and kidney failure. So for me, it's about finding that natural balance, because
mm-hmm.
I'm not putting my trust in their hands anymore.
Right.
So that's the biggest part for me. So just keep, go ahead, finish out what after they decided to put you on chemo.
Yeah. So after they decided to put me on chemo, I went through 6 months of that. Right. So the first three rounds were fine. I ended up in my local hospital. The first week of July, that would have been July 2008. It was 2000. Yeah, it was 2008, because in 2008, that was when I had to quit work because I went on dialysis. What happened was, I'll never forget it. It was June 12th of 2008. That's my brother's birthday, my big brother's birthday. I was looking forward to spending my summer vacation in the North Carolina mountains, you know, with one of the greatest flutists on earth. I was getting ready to perform for him. And much to my surprise, my nephrologist looked at me and said, you know, I had my appointment with my nephrologist that Monday. And he was looking at me and he was saying, there's no way you're going to be able to go to the mountains. You need to prepare to start dialysis immediately. And I said, no, I'm going to the mountains. Do you know, 24 hours after he spoke that, I started having symptoms of kidney failure. I was vomiting. I couldn't keep anything down. I had delirium. I was hot. I was cold. I mean, it just was, it was a terrible situation. I had obvious fluid buildup.
To rack my brain and figure out why they told you chemo would be a break on your, I mean, like, not to harp on this, but everything you're describing is all side effects of chemotherapy.
Right. You're absolutely right. Well, the intention, now, if you do study the literature, chemo can be a viable option for the lupus patient.
It can be, but let's be realistic about this chemo process and how risky chemo is, period. Now, it's risky for a cancer patient. Absolutely. I can imagine how risky it would be for a lupus patient.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. You are. And I ended up having a very serious side effect from that I'll talk about in a minute, but you know, Dr. Tim has looked at me and he said, you need to prepare for dialysis. And 24 hours later, actually 36 hours later, I found myself in being wheeled into Rex Hospital in Raleigh. And I literally had 25 pounds of fluid on me being retained because my kidneys had failed. And so I was on my fourth round of chemo. I had a heart attack and I started dialysis all within 24 hours, all within a day. A heart attack, fourth round of treatment with chemo and emergency dialysis. If I had not been rolled, I say in the back of my mind, and when I'm telling this story, that June 12th, 2008 was supposed to be my death date. It was supposed to be my death date because I was not supposed to survive that. And if I had been 30 seconds later to the emergency room, I wouldn't have survived it. So at that point, I'm in the hospital, I'm 25 years old now, and I have no idea what the hell is going on. What the hell is a dialysis machine? Dial what? My kidneys did what? I had a heart, what? You know, I just was perplexed at the situation going on within my own body. And, you know, thank God I had doctors and nurses that were really compassionate. And they were really interested in helping me understand what was going on with me.
This is a 2-second nutrition tip. Today's tip is become a savvy food label reader. Understand exactly what's going into your food. Let me know how that goes. This has been a 2-second nutrition tip.
NRI Wellness brings you the latest health and nutrition information, creates customized nutrition programs, and walks you through the process to ensure your success.
So you say June 2008 was supposed to be your death date. That was supposed to be the day you were supposed to leave this earth, this universe, your soul was supposed to be sent to heaven. What happened after that? How did the doctors handle you after that?
So the doctors handled me with very kid gloves, and I was very appreciative of that. And I think a lot of that had to do with the way I presented myself, even in the midst of my illness. You know, the doctors could tell that I was an intelligent person by the way I spoke and by the way I asked questions. And it's really kind of a shame, and this is kind of like a sidebar, it's really kind of a shame the way doctors discriminate, you know. The same person or another person that maybe wasn't as educated as I was or knew as much as I did maybe about health or knew what questions to ask, are kind of treated some type of way. But when you come off as being, you know, who you are, in my case, they, and especially being a Black girl or Black woman, they come off a little bit, it's just different. So the doctors and the nurses, when I was in recs, they, during June of 2008 into July, actually ended up spending about 3 weeks in the hospital. And they were very nice. They made sure that I understood what was going on. They advised me as to what dialysis was, that there are different ways of doing dialysis, and that this was going to be something, you know, this was going to be a part of my life for a long while, until either I died or I got a kidney transplant.
So let me ask you this, and I'm going to go back to, you know, something that you said just a few minutes ago. I wanted to let you get it all out. You actually dealt with, because that's why I asked what happened after June 2008. It appears that you dealt with some of the things that quite a few of us deal with across the board. When we talk about systematic racism and how we are treated in certain arenas, this is what we actually mean. And even in the medical field, we are dismissed, the way people continue to brush you off and allowed you to almost get sicker and sicker and until you almost died. That is a very clear cut case of systematic racism.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then for it to only, you know, only after you died were you handled with care and people started to actually see you as a
human. Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you for bringing that parallel of systemic racism up. It's, you know, it's real. I know I say that. I don't say that to be simplistic about it, but it is. It's real. And I have found that the only reason why I have gotten this far and have been so successful is because I had to learn how to take charge of my own health. And that means educating myself in all things lupus and all things kidney disease. And the more I educated myself in these two fields, the more engaged I could become with my healthcare team because I had the knowledge. And it got to a point where I was telling them how to treat me, both as an African American, as a woman, and then as a patient.
Yeah, because it became to the point that you were empowered about your own wellness and your own healthcare. You knew. You had already faced the battle of the unknown and leaving it in their hands and exactly what that was going to turn out and be like for you. But you knew that you had to educate yourself so that you would feel empowered and so that you could challenge some of the things that were being said to you as opposed to taking it. So that's also very important for people to understand that it's important for us to get out here, educate ourselves, read books, you know, look up the information, go
ask
to
questions.
Oh my gosh. I always tell my clients, especially those that see me on a private level, when you go to your PCP, your primary care physician, take a list of questions that you have. You're always, something is always something, a creak or an ailment or something is always there. Write it down. Acknowledge that.
Absolutely. We can't be so dependent on our brains to, you know, remember everything that, yeah, you do definitely want to, that's a part of taking charge of your health, you know, knowing how to knowing how to ask the right questions, and writing those questions down to be sure that you don't forget them, and making sure that you don't leave that office until your questions have been answered and that you understand the implications of that information and what it means for you. So,
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I had to do. because from June 2008 until January of 2016, it's like 5.5 years I spent on dialysis. And that life, I don't wish that life on anybody. My first dialysis out of the hospital was actually a couple of weeks before my birthday, which was August 5th. And I was just devastated. I didn't know what was going on around me. All these machines were beeping. Nurses were hurrying to stations and bays and moving people out and then moving people in and sticking them with needles. And it's a lot. And I had to educate myself on that process by itself. But it was through learning and asking questions that I was able to really understand the process and understand it to a point where I actually was giving it to myself the last 2.5 years that I was on dialysis before my kidney transplant. So I actually ended up being my own nurse, my own doctor, my own tech, if you will, taking my own blood, giving myself my own dialysis, doing my own labs, making my own dialysate, like all of that was my responsibility. And I did it. Was it hard? It wasn't a walk in the park, but that's what these nurses are here for, to help you. Once you make it known that you're in this to get better and that you need help making you better, they look at you a little bit different. And so for me, in my experience, you know, I had nurses that wanted to help me take charge of my own health. And I milked that. I milked it to the point where I was able to do dialysis in my own house, in my own bedroom. And not only that, I was actually able to complete my master's degree in flute performance, driving back and forth from Greenville every day. Because I could do, you know, I could do that. I had that liberty. I had that freedom.
So you really took the extra step to actually take care of yourself. Let me ask you this. I mean, usually I ask my guests, like, what are their biggest challenges? But we already know some of your biggest challenges. We've already heard some of the things that you've been through. What are some of the things that people misunderstand about your journey?
I think sometimes people misunderstand my making it easy or my making my journey appear easy or easier than what it really is. You know, I had several people, or, you know, people just in general have said, you know, how were you able to do dialysis and complete a master's degree and work several jobs and this and that? And
what I found is when you're facing, or when you face death, one of the things that we actually do is we actually start pouring into our goals, our dreams, and our beliefs, and our purpose. And we start actually wanting to help others, wanting to do more, wanting to leave something of value behind, even if it's just a recording of our voice saying something intelligent. Once you face death, you actually want to do and be more.
Absolutely. When you're facing your own mortality, it puts a lot of things in perspective. For me, you know, I think the hardest part, and there have been some hard days, and there continues to be hard days. You know, even though I'm a kidney transplant patient and have been for a little over 6 years, I think one of my biggest struggles was learning to give up the life I thought I should have had and embrace the life that God has given me now. Because if it had been up to me, of course I wouldn't have wished this on myself or anyone else, but I had to give up that I was never going to be a famous flutist in one of the top orchestras of the world. You know, I had to give up not being able to teach at a music conservatory and being able to train the next generation of flutists and being able to travel the country as in the world as a solo flutist. That is what I wanted to do. I just knew that I was going to be principal of the principal flutist of the New York Philharmonic, have a teaching job at a conservatory, maybe Juilliard or New England, and be this amazing Black flutist who can just do her magic on stage and in the classroom. So when I realized that none of that was going to come to pass, I grieved. And I mean, there are still days that I grieve that life is just not what God had for me. This is my journey. And I don't say that to say, well, I'm just settling for this. I mean, this clearly is what I say it with joy, because even though it has been a really hard journey, I've had some steep mountains to climb. I've had talk about some valley moments. I've had a lot of valley moments. but God's plan is bigger. And this is not about me.
Yes.
Even though I feel sometimes like it's about me. And that's usually when I'm getting in my feelings about something that I don't like. But I have to keep reminding myself that this is something bigger. I'm just a vessel.
Yes.
in a story. That he wants others to see through me or to hear through me. And I feel like at the end of the day, although sometimes it can pain me to say, because I love flute. Anyone who knows me knows that that is my love, and performing is my love. But when I look at what that life would have brought me versus what this life has brought me, this life has brought me so much more fulfillment. And it has manifested itself in me being able to help other people. That's what this is about.
So what I'm hearing is that through what we often call our plan for life and what the universe and what God decides for us, because, you know, it never goes the way we planned it to go. I often tell my clients, it's okay to make a plan, but be ready to pivot, be ready to understand that it's never going to go as planned, because however you planned it is not what was planned or designed for you. So what happened was you ended up falling into your purpose by way of your journey. Just from listening to what you said, this was a better road for you based upon what happened in your life and how you're able to help and heal others versus the road that you actually planned for your life.
Exactly. Exactly. The road that I planned for my life was shallow and very me-centered, and just, you know, as I think about it, kind of selfish. Not really, you know, yeah, planting seeds, you know, through my students and, you know, seeing them go on to do amazing things. Of course, those are good seeds, but I just feel like there's a bigger plan than me sitting on a stage playing with a symphony to get maybe 30 seconds of applause and then on to the next.
Well, it is. Look at what you're doing now. You're literally telling your, I guess, what to say, your testimony of how you actually were able to get diagnosed and healed. And you're telling that because there are people out there that are suffering with symptoms that don't even know that, you know, they could be on the road to this autoimmune disorder as well. They could be on the road to renal failure. And right. through you telling your story, they're actually hearing this, and this will motivate them to maybe make an appointment to go see their doctor or feel empowered to speak up about some of the things that they're experiencing. So kudos to you for that. Okay.
Well, thank you. That is the basis of what I do and what I want to do. You know, you said earlier, this when you are staring down the barrel of your own mortality, it puts everything into perspective. And I have come to realize that I have a talent for speaking, and I have an incredible amount of knowledge for science and health and helping other people make good decisions. Good, healthy decisions for their life and for their wellness. And that is what I want to do at the end of the day. Not saying that music and the arts isn't important, because it is. And I believe that the music and the arts is another way to wellness, which is another podcast.
I was going to say, didn't I just interrupt you earlier? That you were a flutist, like, come on now. I just said music therapy. Music heals people in so many ways. So don't think for a moment I'm not thinking when I can have you back on our video version of our podcast so you can actually play online for us. So you all heard me say this, that I'm going to bring her back. And, you know, when I say that, it's often with our guests that have multi-talents. So, yes, thank you. Well, I want to ask you this. How do you continue to learn in order to stay on top of things with your disorders? That's important for people to understand and know. So give us some key tips on how you do this, because I know people are out there and they're probably thinking to themselves, how can I learn for myself so that I can look up and feel empowered enough to go to my doctor and say, listen, this is what I believe you need to be treating me for. Not saying that your doctor is wrong, so dispute everything, but if you know you're feeling certain symptoms and you're very, very lethargic, sick, ill, any of those things, you definitely need to speak up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the way that I keep myself informed is I do a lot of reading. I know now, you know, people want to get information, you know, at a click's whim. And when you have two or even one complicated disease, you kind of have to work a little bit harder to get real information, because there's a lot of fraudulent information.
Listen, the thing about it is, what I always tell people is, be very leery of what you read on the internet by way of articles. Go to trusted sources. So ask your doctor some of the journals in which they actually read. Ask them, you know, some of the newspapers or some of the organizations that they subscribe to. The reason being is that will keep you informed as well. You know, we lost trust in 2020 in the CDC. So it's very hard to tell people to go to the CDC's website and listen or look for things, because so like who, all of those organizations sort of, we sort of said, okay, we can't listen to them anymore. But I do know for a fact that the NIH does have research projects that doctors, scientists have done. They have those published on their website. So you can actually find that information on the NIH website as well.
You're absolutely right. I love the idea of talking to your doctor about what they subscribe to. That is something that I have done as well. And yes, you really want to be sure that you're reading articles that have been written by people that have been in medicine, but whatever field or branch of medicine it may be. And for me, I like reading more scholarly sources. It goes more into depth about whatever it is I'm trying to find out about. But it's very, very important. And keep your ear to the news. You know, listen to a radio. I know in my car, I have Sirius, and they have health stations, you know, where it's nothing but health all day, yes. All night.
And you actually have podcasts now, yes, that are being hosted by hospitals, by doctors, where they are actually giving out healthcare information. And then again, can listen to this podcast.
Right. And, you know,
we bring them on. We have professionals, the experts, but go ahead.
Exactly. You know, I became so inspired by, my own journey that I decided in 2015 that I was going to pursue a doctorate in public health epidemiology. So I've been in my program for about 4.5 years now. I'll be done in 6 months to a year.
All right, Nanny.
And I hope the reason why I'm pursuing the degree is so that, yes, that field, public health and epidemiology, really interests me. But I want to help people at the end of the day. I want to help people understand why they should care about their own wellness. And I want to be at the table. I want to be at the table where health policies and health decisions are being made so that I can better help my people be well.
If you want to be seen, you have to stop being invisible to opportunity. I'm Kay Henry, licensed mental health counselor and host of Black Therapy Uncensored. Your prescription to positivity starts here.
Did you know that the average person carries around 5 to 20 pounds of fecal matter in their intestines, depending on their diet? Some people are walking around feeling sluggish, constipated, unable to lose weight, skin issues, and allergies, all because of the toxins that are in their intestines. Listen, life gives us enough battles to fight. Your health shouldn't be one of those. If you change your mindset on how you actually view food, you will never have to worry about your health or weight again. I'm Ashley, owner of She Loves Wellness. I help people transition into a healthy lifestyle. I offer tips, recipe, and supplement kits to jumpstart your lifestyle change. Visit me on Facebook and IG at She Loves Wellness for your product information and samples. Don't forget, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle change.
Now, this has been a fabulous interview with Tanisha Bullock. We're going to wrap things up, but before we do, and please be aware that this is not the last time she will be on the show. Y'all heard me interrupt her earlier. We'll come back and play the flute for us. You guys know that we move into video format at the end of this year. So in December, when we come back to our second season, we'll actually be in video format. So we will actually be having Tanisha on then, so yes, that you will not only hear her, but you will get to see her play. However, in the meantime, in between time, Tanisha, tell people how they can contact you if they'd like more information on dealing with lupus or kidney failure.
Sure. So my main email address, you can contact me there anytime. It is TunisiaB1983@gmail.com, and I'll spell that out for you. It's T as in Tom, U-N-I-S-I-A, B, as in boy, 1983@gmail.com. I also am on Facebook. So, and I think you have the link to that. Is that correct?
So what I'm going to do, you guys, as we do with all of our guests, you know, we place an article on our website in our iWellness. So you can find how to link to Tanisha on social media on our website. And then if you follow me on social media, how about this? Join our group, 10 Dimensions of Wellness, on Facebook. Tanisha is in that group as well. You can hit her up in Messenger on there. You can ask her any questions. She's going to come on in a few weeks and do some classes for us. She didn't know that. I just threw that in, y'all. So, you know.
You know what? The more, the merrier. Okay. I am down for it all.
Listen, y'all know I do that to all my guests. But anyway, let's get around to our question portion of our show. You know, we end with our four patented questions that we ask our guests. So, Tanisha, the first question we want to ask you is, what's been the biggest surprise you've had in the last few months?
Oh gosh, the biggest surprise that I've had in the last few months. I would say the biggest surprise that I've had was being laid off of my job due to COVID. So I, for the last 2 years, was I worked at a public charter school in Wilson, North Carolina, which is about 25 miles away from Rocky Mount. And there I was the band director, middle school and high school band director. And in my first year there, I also taught Spanish in addition to my music roles. And so when it was time to renew contracts, my boss decided that he did not want music or the arts at Wilson Prep. And I think mainly because he didn't know how to figure it out. So I was laid off, and I've never been in this position before. And I have to admit, I'm struggling a little bit with finding, okay, I know that there was a reason behind this. So that means God wants to, there's something else he wants me to do. And I'm just trying to learn to be patient and to hear him before I make any moves. So that probably has been the biggest surprise. Okay. And adjustment. So
far. Okay. Now, what do you wish you had known 10 years ago that you know now?
I wish I had known that every day is not a crisis. You know, with lupus, with systemic lupus like I have basically every form. I have discoid lupus, which affects the skin. I have lupus nephritis, which affects the kidney. I even have lupus affecting my brain now. So I've had to learn that it is okay, like, you know, to wake up feeling normal and not have anything hurt or something brewing in my body is okay. Every day is not a crisis. Every day you're not going to have something go on, and to enjoy those days when you are okay.
Okay. Now, what inspires you and makes you feel like your best self?
Oh man, there's so much that inspires me. Wow. Music inspires me for sure. It's that energy that keeps me going when I feel like everything else is crumbling. My family and my friends are inspirations to me. They have been so supportive of me in this journey. I wouldn't have been able to make it without them. Now, I must say, a lot of people who I thought were my friends have kind of went by the wayside, and which is okay. People are in your life for a reason and for a season. And so, yeah, I would definitely have to say music, my family, and my friends.
All right. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it say and why?
That is such a creative question. If I had a billboard, what would it say and why?
Yeah, and you can put anything that you want on it. So just remember that. What message would you put out there for the world?
I think I'm going to have to quote Katy Perry on this one. Probably thankful and grateful. And I would have the word thankful scratched out. Because in her new song, she, and it's on the Target commercial. I'm pretty sure all of you have heard it. She says, yes, I'm thankful. Scratch that, baby. I'm grateful. And I would have to, I would say that, or I would use those words, because through everything that I've been through, I am grateful to God that He's allowed me to live, that He's allowed me to inspire people, that He's allowed me to educate people, that He's allowed me to share music with people. In spite of what I continue to go through and what I have gone through, I'm still standing. And not only am I still standing, I'm still standing with an exclamation part or exclamation point behind my name. So I am grateful to Him for every good thing and for every maybe not so good thing, because through it all, I've learned and I've become a better person.
Awesome. So glad to hear that. So guys, this has been another episode of the 10 Dimensions of Wellness. We are so grateful to have had Tanisha Bullock on this episode, and we look forward to having her back again. Now, as always, thank you for being a guest on our show.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. You can listen to the 10 Dimensions of Wellness on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Music, Google Podcasts, and a plethora of other audio platforms. But you can also see and hear it on our YouTube channel at NRI Wellness. Now, don't forget to join our Facebook group our group on Facebook, 10 Dimensions of Wellness, for after the podcast. We generally have a lot of our guests in that group who teach some classes, do some courses for a couple of months, so that you can actually experience some of the services and experience some of the things that they talk about on our show. So again, thank you for listening. We look forward to seeing you again next week or in a few days, whichever day this is. Thank you, guys. All right. Have an awesome day.
NRI Wellness brings you the latest health and nutrition information, creates customized nutrition programs, and walks you through the process to ensure your success.